So the guest I have with me today is Corey Campbell, Creative Director at the Belgrade Theatre. I follow Corey for a few years now. I first saw Corey at Club 2B, so it's a Gatsby-style production the Belgrade put on. It's one of the last things that I did before lockdown and COVID, and I kind of remember it fondly. And like all good Coventry relationship star, I bumped into Corey a couple of weeks ago at Godot Festival, and I would pestered him to be on the podcast. Obviously, I did my background research on Corey, and I can see the impact he's made in his sphere, and it was great to see around being an honorary member of the RBC, and in 2019 becoming a creative lead as part of the Belgrade Theatre's preparation for Coventry becoming City of Culture, and obviously the productions that followed that, including the digital TV series Seaview, and co-directing the boxing play Fighting Irish, which I saw and which was amazing. 2022 has seen huge changes for the Belgrade. Laura Elliott has been appointed CEO, and Corey changed from co-artistic director to becoming the role of creative director. I have seen so many announcement statements in the past from lots of different people. They all feel watered down and they all feel a little bit prepared. And when I saw Corey's, which was, let's get it in, let's get it done, I knew that Corey was someone that thought the same as me. So Corey, what a pleasure to have you with me today.
No, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
So I know that you're not from Coventry. I am somebody that's a big ambassador of, even if you're not from Coventry, you can be a great Coventry kid. So give me an idea of kind of your how you grew up and how you came to be in the city.
I grew up in Birmingham with my family, with my mainly my sisters and my mum and dad. I suppose the way I came up to Coventry is I was getting in a lot of trouble. It's a typical story for quite a few of the inner city young people that were here. You know, I was getting in a lot of politics, and I managed to find a route through the help of a man called David Van, who's died now, but he was my mentor and inspiration. He basically told me to just use art as a vehicle of expression instead of using my fists, my feet, and anything else I could find. And so then I started to take drama, acting, performing arts in general very, very seriously after meeting him and after being given the opportunities that he gave to me. And then I decided that I was going to go to drama school. I was really against going to university, but I decided I wanted to go. So again, I got David's support, got into drama school, had also helped the help of people like Shirley Pernell and Kirk Dawes. You know, I'd be remiss in my duty if I didn't give those people a shout out, because, you know, everybody thinks they're self-made, but it really does take a village to support any individual. And then, yeah, basically once I'd graduated, I was looking for a base for the kind of work I wanted to create, because I wanted to create my own work. I didn't want to be part of anybody else's system, in all honesty. And I was rejected everywhere, to be fair. I mean, in the first year, nobody took us in, but Coventry did. And it was a really interesting thing, because by the following year, everybody wanted to take us in, but we stayed in Coventry. You know, that in the shortest, quickest sense is how my relationship with art started in Coventry. I'd always been back and forth from Coventry because I traveled the region. I'm a West Midlands boy, really, you know. I never really came out of the West Midlands, but we did a lot of partying in Coventry. I had a lot of friends that lived in Coventry, indeed moved to Coventry. So between Coventry and Birmingham and Wolverhampton, I tend to you know, be floating around there as a youth anyway. But that's how my artistic journey started with Coven. I'm privileged that I had the opportunity, but it was a choice to stay. It was an absolute decision to stay in Coventry and try and build here.
It's something that really resonates with me. I don't hide from the fact that when I finished university, I waved my degree in the air and thought everyone would come running to me, and I just got rejected and rejected and rejected. And I had to go over and above. So I did voluntary work at the city council, and which that led to me getting a job. I think it's something that's really hard. And I guess for you now, in your position, you're able to look at how you can support people who wouldn't typically get those opportunities.
Exactly, that's one of the keys, but that's one of my personal goals, but that's also the vision for the theatre. I think there's a spirit of Coventry that is, you know, we were saying earlier, you know, Coventry, the city that welcomes, you know, But it is really a space of opportunity, a space where you can grow and learn and feel at home doing that and have the comfort, sort of comforts of home while being able to explore and figure out who you are. And then in terms of art, figure out who you are as an artist. They're two very different things. So that's something that I would really like to keep passing on. That's why I created my company Strictly Arts before getting here as well, because I really wanted to give the opportunities and the knowledge and the information that I had been given. It's just always about passing the baton on, and that's part of this transition and this journey now. So that's for me digging deep into the idea that that Coventry has the talent and more than enough of it for us to be able to create a cyclical process of both artist development and amazing high quality work. And it's just the opportunity that's necessary, and we're here to give that opportunity. And we are here for all people, but we're definitely looking at how we can nurture the youth that are coming through, and how we can not just give them opportunities, but show them that there are spaces within an institution like the Belgrade where you can flourish and earn a living. You know, it's not just every day, you know, come and volunteer and come. No, you can earn a living through art, through expression. And again, that's a privilege. So that's the second thing that I think will definitely change and is changing. And the third thing, which I think definitely has been set up by previous leadership, but though I was here and part of that process, and a big part of that process along with Justine and Belisha, is our refurbs, our refurbishment and our spaces. It's more open, it allows people to come through, and there's a lot more room for anybody to not just to come and use our, you know, rehearsal rooms and stuff, but actually just to come have a coffee, meet mates, meet friends. And then we just got to look at the prices of those coffees, Neil. That's the next step, you know, making sure that inclusion and diversity flows right the way through the organisation, and that's more than a buzzword.
Yeah. I do some work supporting Bars Hill School, which obviously is a really close school to the Belgrade, and the Belgrade were kind enough to lend us a room to do what their final presentation as part of some work experience type work they were doing with me, and we met for a coffee here, and I was really conscious of, I've got my coffee and there's going to be 12 young people coming in, they're not going to buy a coffee and they're not going to feel welcome. Didn't feel like that at all. Yeah. And I think in the past, I think you and I spoke because we walked up here just now, I never felt the Belgrade was a place to go and work out of, whereas now I would say a third of my time I spend just sat on the booths downstairs, just kind of working and at my own leisure. It does feel, and I guess that's what comes with a huge refurbishment. It's so different to how it was before.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, it's not just yourself. We do, myself and Laura, we hear it a lot now. We're proud to hear it that, like, oh my gosh, Belgrade is a home for us. We get the guys from JD Gym come down and use the space, and they're not even using the flash new cafe, they're using the foyer that's been here for years and years. But again, and I think it's also the ability, for me personally, I like to be on the ground. I don't want to be an AD that's in an ivory tower, you get me? I like to be out there, as you saw me, Godiva, in my sliders, my slippers, my however I am, I'm the same everywhere. You know, my mom tells me off for it, but I don't change. I don't have, you know, code switching in the way that we do. I just think everybody needs to meet the real me. And I hope that means that everybody gets to meet the real Belgrade, you know. I hope that supports the doors continuing to be open to all kinds of people.
I saw it when we walked in, the guy that was unloading his van ready to start rehearsals today, and you said, can I give you a hand? Like, I saw that myself at the NHS when I was at the NHS. The leaders that I most aligned myself to were those that put a graft in and supported everybody, not just sit in their ivory tower. And I guess, is that something you're looking to try to do or naturally do?
It's something I naturally do, because it's not changed for me since like 20, whatever it was when I got here. When I got here, I'd help people unload. I'd help the technicians unload. Most of the times they wouldn't let me, even then. And I was an artist in development. And so I ask the same questions now. Mm. You know what I mean? If there's any way I can support anyone in this organization doing anything, I'm not too high and mighty to do that. I'm, of course, going to back it. In fact, I volunteered in 2019 when I got the co-AD role. The first thing I did was volunteer to do with the catering staff. so that they could relax on when we do our Christmas dinners. Because, of course, when we're doing all our Christmas dinners, they're still having to work.
Yeah.
So I went and I was a porter boy with the guys. Got to meet them all, got to introduce myself properly. And now we know each other on a first name basis. And it's not, you know, my boss or my manager or any of that coming through. It's just Corey. And then they began to give me tips on how I should program, which was really interesting. Liz gave me a great tip and I used it. It sold out the whole main house, you know what I mean? And that was from our catering stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Mon and Rob Clues, believe it or not, were the inspiration I had for Club to Be. You know, they're two of my I think one of them at the time was a technical manager. They're my technicians. This is the life and blood of the organization. These are the people that don't get the praise, but they're fully backed it, you know. And I always talk about BPS. Nobody knows a lot about BPS, but Belgrade has a production services that builds all the sets far, far away from the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are absolute legends, legends. You know, I can't speak highly enough of Pete, Claire, all of them. Because the work that they do supports what I do. And when I've run out of ideas and getting frustrated, they keep going, mate. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They plug the gaps. Mm-hmm. They're phenomenal. Like, it's supposed to be a family here. And I think more people need to know that and need to see that. And those who aren't usually spoken about really do deserve their flowers. They deserve their credit because they've kept the building running for 15 odd years. Mm-hmm. Adrian, can't speak highly enough of him. It does my head in. We argue like nobody's business, but he's phenomenal. Mm. He's the best of the best, Adrian Sweeney. You know, I could talk about them all, honestly. I could talk about them all. They're out of this world.
Recognition doesn't cost anything. And I remember small things. You talked about people that helped you along your way. I remember people that stuck their neck out for me when I was working at a sandwich shop and couldn't get out. And I remember it now, and I still follow up to them, and I still send them a Christmas message or I've done this piece of work. I think you'd really like it. I think it's really important to kind of recognize those that were there before and then pass that knowledge on to people that you can continue to kind of support.
Yeah.
So talk me through Strictly Arts and how that first came to be. What kind of time are we looking at?
We're talking about Strictly Arts came 2015, so not that long ago, to be fair. It was founded by a couple of us graduates from drama school and then supported by wider West Midlands artists. I have to always give a shout out to those guys that came through from Nuts and made Strictly Arts what it was, and Leicester, like Kieran Vyers and Phoebe Brown, rest in peace. But the initial guys was myself, Raya, Ray Seeley, that is, Kieran Amos, Marcel White, rest in peace, my little brother, and Henry Bays, who's now off, I think he's doing Matilda or something like that. He's killing it. I don't know what he does. Sorry, Biscuit, as I call him, Biscuit. So we just kind of banded together. I had this idea to create this company that was going to deal with telling the stories of diverse communities, but particular stories from the Black community. And we just got together and did it. And the beautiful thing for me was that it's a Black-led company. But what we had was so many allies, like Henry Bays, like Pitt Barkley, you know, like Josh Morris, like Lucy Glassbrook, you know, these were all our white peers and friends that were in full support of our vision, that knew how to support it, not by trying to step in front of it, but by pushing it from behind so that we could lead our own stories ourselves. And I was so grateful to them and you know, still in contact with them. So 2015, we started doing a show called Green Leaves Falls, which was here. It was a big show. It got rave reviews. We were really grateful for it. But of course, you know, we were young and new and didn't understand the industry quite as much as we do now. And there was a 12-person cast, you know, very expensive show to produce, very expensive show to tour. We borrowed set from BPS. This is why I talk about them so much, because even when I was in development here, we borrowed set from those guys and they built little bits for us under the instruction of Adrian, who supported us no end, and Hamish. So that's how we started out, really. And after we did Greenies Falls, like I say, I think we began to get more recognition, in particular in the north of England, you know, and the wider West Midlands. And we made a conscious decision not to go back to Birmingham. We made a conscious decision that we were going to stay in Coventry, who supported us before they saw what we were able to do here at the Belgrade. And then Strictly Arts went from strength to strength. We then produced a show called Freeman. It was part devised, part written by the amazing Camilla and Danielle Sanderson from Royal Birmingham Conservatoire directed that piece of work with me, and it just went everywhere in the end. You know, we had an amazing Fringe. We won the Charlie Hart Hill Award, which meant that we got to do Fringe Festival. It sold out within a week. And then every day was a sellout show. And then we traveled the world, went to Chicago. I mean, Strictly Arts in general, I've been everywhere. Shanghai, Chicago, Manhattan, Peru, Dubai, Egypt, Turkey. You know, we've managed to travel the world with the work we do. But this year, sadly, we lost our little brother, Marcel White. I love you, Mars. We lost him. And we also lost Phoebe. And I lost my cousin, Anton. And so we just decided that it was probably time to just stop the company at this point, because all the founders and members were sadly disappearing, and our hearts are with them and their family. You know, Master's family is my family, and we just sit and regroup and figure out the next steps.
I think the thing with something like that, I lost somebody really close to me as well. So the guy that took me on at the NHS, so Simon Dudman, he was kind of my role model, my mentor. He passed away age 34. Grim, horrible. Maybe. But the thing that stays with me, and I can see stays with you, is the organisation might have stopped, but it lives on through you and your work and your foundation. And I'm the same. Everything I talk about, recognising people that supported me, I still check in with his wife and his kids. We send them bits and pieces at Christmas. You know, like, that stays on through me. And
I would agree. And the rest of the company, you know, as we progressed, we brought on people like Amy Powell, who's a phenomenal actor, and Kamisha, and, you know, and the company grew and got smaller and grew, you know. So in a lot of ways, you know, the legacies live on for everybody. And and I think we had such a great run together as a family. We just cherish that, and try and keep our head above water as we continue.
So 2021, a key year for the city. You played a huge part in that as part of your role at the Belgrade. How did that role initially came? Because that would have come after Club 2B.
Yeah, it came after Club 2B. We a strange thing with that role. That role. Was about diversifying leadership, and it was an idea that was about what would happen if three young, diverse artists took over an organization like the Belgrade.
In their biggest year ever.
In their biggest year. You know, that was the part that was like, boom, this sounds really exciting. And as usual with these things, you know, even though it's exciting, it feels like geographically we're underrated. So if something like that had happened somewhere else, mm-hmm. it would have been this huge thing nationally. Mm-hmm. But we're completely overlooked. And I've often seen, in particular with Coventry, even before I was born, over the years, how innovation gets stolen from this city. It's tragic. And the wider West Midlands, for that matter. And I think this was one of those things where it was a great, innovative, and I really do believe it was innovative, idea, in as much as to say, this is how we hand over power, this is how we hand over leadership, and this is how we also, at the same time, train, or even in a lot of ways, interview, audition, mm. the new faces of the artistic world. And so it was a big risk. I got drawn in largely by Justine, if I'm honest. You know, a lot of people wouldn't know, but we have a very close relationship, and she was speaking to me about all the things that we'd be able to do and the optics of an opportunity like that. So came in to interview, and managed to get the job, and what a privilege it was. Difficult year, because we were hit by the pandemic. You know, as soon as I got the job, you know, the pandemic struck, and we were still doing things like we created the Black Creative Network in that time. You know, More Than a Moment was supported by the Belgrade, and I believe people were getting Fringe first. Is it Stage First? I can't even remember what that bleeding award's called, but people were getting awards for the work that we were doing here. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, Belgrade was so under the radar, unspoken about, and a lot of those initiatives that people were talking about, that other people were being credited for, those things started right here in this organization, in this building, under the co-eds. So that's how that whole process came about. And
I think it's our city's problem sometimes. I don't think we're the best at shouting about ourselves. Mm. And I think it takes young people like you and I to come in through to shout about the city and to say, actually, let's turn on the negativity and let's push the positivity. I think it's happening more and more. I think our city, and maybe City of Culture played a part in that, but in the steps forward, we talked COVID took us back in the way that obviously what came out of 2021 wasn't what was initially planned. And I think that my opinion of the Belgrade historically has always been, it was the pantomime. It was a place to go when you wanted to do the I don't know, because that would have been Corporation Street. I was thinking the sleigh ride. I always think the panto and the sleigh ride at the same time. And then I always thought it was somewhere that touring plays came. That's hugely different to what it is now. The production, has it ramped up, or is that just my perception?
You know, I think it has ramped up, definitely. But I think it's a bit of both, if I'm honest. Belgrade was always producing, but again, very, very quietly. It's such a strange thing. You wouldn't really know what was the difference between something that was touring here and something that was directly produced here.
Well, my thing was, if there was someone from EastEnders in starring in it. Yeah. That was how I used to work out. If there was Martin Kemp starring in it, I knew that it was touring.
Yeah. And again, that's about to change. You know, we got some big heavyweight punchers coming to produce with us now, you know, on shows. And that's an amazing thing. I think we definitely have ramped up the producing, and the City of Culture years supported that. You know, we produced like, I forgot how many, it was something like 11 shows that year, 11 pieces of work, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was at a time when most of the places were either locked down or too nervous and scared to produce their own work. But, you know, we took the plunge for the community, for the people of Coventry. That's what pieces of work like Fighting Irish was about, you know. That's what works like Seaview and Nathello and May Queen there was a great one there. Can't remember, but anyway, we did so many pieces of work within the year, and also co-produced pieces of work. It was just, we were in a very privileged position, but also it was brave to just keep pushing, keep punching.
It just feel like courage is running through the organisation at the moment in various ways, whether that was for initially taking you on in the role that you did, or supporting Strictly Arts with the performances, and then your role as part of 2021. And obviously then more recently with your appointeeship as part of the new look, what would you call it, senior management for the Belgrade with yourself and Laura coming in. How did that next stage come about?
Well, I think we have to say, or indeed pretend, but whichever one, that it was all part of the initial plan. You know, the idea that that Hamish and Joanna had initially spearheaded in handing over the keys, even just
a, who's Hamish and Joanna?
Hamish and Joanna were the old exec and artistic director, and you know, they were really the head of the organization, spearheading this handing over the keys program, which was the City of Culture program that led to us being co-artistic directors here. And their thing was always said to be the idea that, how do we really transition? How do we really hand over power? So I'd like to say, and I'd like to think, that it was all part of the initial plan, that not necessarily I would be here, but that it was time to hand over leadership to someone who was going to take the reins and move the organization into its next phase. Hold on, what was the question? I forgot.
We're many around kind of how you and Laura first came in. I guess we've not really talked about Laura so far, but I think it'd be nice to kind of recognise. I think I'll try and get Laura on here at this podcast again. I saw Laura with you at Godoy Festival, and it's been great to see. But yeah, more around kind of those two roles coming through in a new leadership.
Yeah, no, I think it was that. And of course, it went through the normal rigorous interview process. But I think it was having had that City of Culture year, having had the organisation being led in a different way by three leaders. I think that our leadership that was there at the time and our board made a decision that, yeah, it was time for that change. And I think that was a good decision. I mean, I would, I suppose, because I'm here. And the appointment of Laura similarly was that. It was just like, let's see where the new vision's going. And, you know, in my interview, we had to pitch the vision. And Laura was actually in place before me. So she was part of my final interview, you know. So, and I was pretty reckless because I'm always pretty reckless. Like I said, I'm the same everywhere I go. So I was surprised that that I got the job. But also, you know, I have track record here in pieces of work like Club To Be that for Christmas is an absolute rave. You know what I mean? And, you know, the organisation weren't sure about it, but Hamish and Joanna took the risk on that piece of work. And, you know, there's so much further it could have gone, but it was more of a test. It was a test to say, right, we got this panto happening in the main house, but what about new audiences? What about you know, couples and work parties and, you know, what about people who want to go out and just be entertained and have a good time? And it's not for families. It's just for, you know, yeah. And I think that they took the risk and they allowed me to just explore on that. And those pieces of work for Coventry hadn't been seen in a long time. So, you know, I think that the guys, or at least the board and Laura, who's done amazing work around the country herself already, I think that they knew that what I was going to do is do stuff that either hadn't been done in a long time or hadn't been done at all. You know, when we speak about works like Seaview, I have some of the more seasoned amongst us. They just constantly were criticising, not in the Belgrade, I mean the national picture of directors, in particular of organisations. They were criticising what we did with work like Seaview.
I saw it, you know. So Club To Be, I don't know if we've kind of said what it is. It probably, maybe if I describe what I experienced. So I'd never been to anything like it in a theatre space. It was almost like an interactive space, almost like you see those secret cinema type things. Yeah. So if you kind of go in and you're not quite sure what you're expecting, and it was very kind of alluding to the fact it's something different. It was very kind of Peaky Blinders, Gatsby type feel. And me and my friend Aidy came. So my boys, and you talk about the pantomime being at the same time, my boys were here at the pantomime with their grandmas and granddads, and they were there, and I saw them after. But it was unlike anything I've seen, and it was innovative, it was different. The room was electric, it kind of, there was roulette stuff there, and it was fun. And when I thought, I need to make sure I got the name of it right, so I Googled it today, and I saw it had a 2-star review, and I read it. And that was not a reflection of what I saw there.
No, I think that's the thing about what we do here. It's a reflection of the industry nationally, but they didn't get what we were doing in Coventry for Coventry, and that's part of the issue with the industry. I mean, it was hilarious. We spoke about it because that same review, we got 2 stars, and then the week before, we got 5 from the exact same paper, different reviewer. You know what I mean? It was like... And I've always been pretty reckless and ignorant about reviews. It's not the way for me. For me, I think you have to really take into consideration a city, a place, the geographical location, and what it is doing for a specific audience or a specific culture and community. And I think that reviewers in general, but also, and I'm speaking generally, which isn't fair, but also the way we receive work is... It's quite snobbish in the industry. It doesn't look at who that works for and what that work is doing for a space and place. And what Club To Be definitely did for me as a director, what I wanted to do was make people see the Belgrade in a completely different way. And we achieved that and people had an amazing time. So it didn't matter in the end what the review said, but for other people outside of that, that does matter because that's what they're going to look up.
Well, the thing is, I would always rather have 5-star reviews and 1-star reviews than 3-star reviews. Do you know, like, I'd rather have something that's divisive, that's challenging, that's going outside of the norm. Yeah. Let's not just keep serving up vanilla. Let's go, let's try a new flavour. Let's try something that's different. And Club 2B did that. What is there plans for doing more stuff like that?
Yeah, we're planning to do Club 2B every year in the same way we do Panto every year. It's going to be the alternative. Okay. You know,
not to give away any secrets, but all set in the same era, or are you going to go down different eras?
We're going to go in different eras. We're always going to celebrate Cov, which is why I think your books are amazing, actually, because I can get lots of inspiration.
You can steal them, don't worry. Yeah. If I get free tickets, that's fine.
So I think that, yeah, Club 2B is one of the ones that we'll keep doing, and it will keep growing. You know, I learned from, at Gecko, who was one of my inspirations, actually, for my theatre company. And, you know, they were explaining that it's really England, in terms of art, that does a show once and then throws it in the bin.
Yeah.
You know, most people that are doing their art really allow their art to grow, you know, year by year, month by month. And Strictly Arts really took that on. I mean, we've only done 3 shows, all of them with huge success. And it's because most people didn't see the first version of it. You know, so all these guys rushing down to see the first of what we're doing. They're not really helping how we're trying to grow our artists, but they're not to know that. They're just doing their job, I suppose.
So before I let you go, I'm asking this from my personal point of view. So we saw the Assembly Gardens pop up, relatively short notice, so not this year, last year. Huge success. Yeah. I went to see multiple shows there, and I was saying to my mates at the time, if I was the Belgrade, I'd be thinking, right, let me find a space and let's make something like that outside of the Belgrade. And I think it came back this year, probably to a bit less acclaim. I think whether it was the novelty of COVID initially loosening up last year, did you learn anything from the Assembly Gardens? Is there anything you kind of take away from what that experience or experiment did?
I think we did. I think we learned a lot from theatre culture in general, but in particular about Assembly Gardens. And also we put up a pop-up theatre in Woodend with the Roundabout, which was from Payne's Plough.
Yeah.
So that was our matchup. And one of the things that I really have learned is we need in-depth and embedded relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't go to a space to do a show and then run off
just
again.
Just take it over.
Yeah. It does feel very much like... we have a Belgrade here, which is home. We have a new space over the road that we haven't spoken about yet. And that is for artists who don't necessarily want to come into that space. That's a space where you say, you know, hopefully communities will take as their own. But what we do want to do, and I suppose what we did learn from these places, is we already have a space where cool visiting work can come.
Mm-hmm.
What I would love to look at is how we build in-depth relationships with communities, and that it doesn't feel like we're doing this for a little bit and it's all show based. It's like, what are we actually doing for the communities around those spaces?
Because then it's not just the one. And even there was the Choir of Men, they did the first year and it was amazing. Then they were back for the second year. I was like, oh, great, but it was the same show. And I was like, oh, I kind of have seen it. I'm like, they were all new songs or it was a different take. And I guess that's what you're saying, is that if you do something that's grassroots and that feels authentic, it will always be different.
It will always grow. I'm sorry to reference Fighting Irish again, but it was like that, the gem of really meeting and understanding Jamie McGough and his work and what they were doing. And, you know, it'd be part of that, how that transitional conversation we had earlier. How do we keep it transitive? Right, this is amazing, this great hit. That was amazing, this great time when we had Assembly. What's the next version? What's the next step? How do we move it forwards?
Corey, I've never been excited about the Belgrade until now. I do feel, and you can feel it when you're in the building, and even the fact that I took a photo outside of the sign, the old sign being back, I kind of feel like it's almost learning from the past but moving things forward.
Yeah.
And I can see how that's going to happen more and more under Laura and yourself, and I look forward to seeing what the next couple of years looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to send love. Thank you for having me on your podcast, but also to say to anybody that's listening, just remember that Belgrade's your home. That's a message from Laura and myself, for sure.